Osho. Zen, the solitary bird, cuckoo of the forest. Talks given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 6.
Beloved Bhagwan, the monk Kanke once visited the nun, Masan Ryonan. He said to himself, "If what she says hits the spot, I will remain there. If it doesn't, I will overturn the Zen seat." He entered the hall, and Masan sent a messenger to ask, "Have you come on a mountain viewing journey, or for the sake of Buddhism?" In response, Kenkei said, "For the sake of Buddhism." So Masan sat upon her seat, and Kanke approached her. She said, "Where did you come from today, may I ask?" Kanke replied, "From Roko." Masan then said to Kanke, "Why don't you remove your bamboo hat?" Kanke had no reply, and making his bows, asked, "What is Masan?" She answered, "It does not show its peak." He asked, "Who is Masan's husband?" She answered, "There is not real form of men and women." He said, "Quats," and asked, "Why then don't you change and disappear?" She said, "I am not a god. I'm not a demon. What could I change?" At this, Kanke knelt down and became the gardener of Masan's temple for 3 years. At another time, Goe went to Sukito and said, "If you can say a word, I will remain here. Otherwise, I will go away." Sukito simply sat there, and Goe went off. From the back, Sukito called him, "Chari, Chari." Goe turned his head. Sukito said, "From birth to death, it is just like this, turning the head, turning the brain. How about it?" Goe was suddenly enlightened, so he broke his staff.
Entering into the world of Zen is not like any other entering. It is entering in yourself. There is no door. And there is no possibility of doing anything. You have simply relaxed so totally that you sink deep within yourself. Remember, relaxation is not an activity. It is absence of all activity. And only in the absence of all activity, when you are relaxed, to your very being, the door opens to all the mysteries of the world. All the miracles of existence. It fills your being with great dance, although you cannot utter a single word. You hear the music that you have never heard, although there is no way to translate it to anyone else. You see flowers blossoming, their colors are absolutely unknown to you. Your whole being becomes a fragrant luminosity. There is nothing to say about it. You can just be it. And the rays of your silence will start creating and weaving a field around you. That's why a master in Zen is not simply a teacher. In all the religions, there are teachers only. They teach you about subjects which you don't know. And they ask you to believe because there is no way to bring those experiences into objective reality. Neither the teacher has known them. He has believed them. He transfers his belief to somebody else. Zen is not a believer's world. It is not for the faithful ones. It is for those daring souls who can drop all belief, unbelief, doubt, reason, mind, and simply enter into their pure existence without boundaries. But it brings a tremendous transformation. Hence, let me say that while others are involved in philosophy, Zen is involved in a metamorphosis, in a transformation. It is authentic alchemy. It changes you from baser metal into gold. But its language has to be understood not with your reasoning and intellectual mind, but with your loving heart. Or even just listening, not bothering whether it is true or not. And a movement comes suddenly that you see it, which has been eluding you your whole life. Suddenly, what Gautam Buddha called 86,000 doors open. These anecdotes, when first translated by Christian missionaries, were translated to show to the world that Christianity is the only civilized religion. And as a proof, look at these stupid dialogues with no reason and no rhyme, but everything backfired. They wanted to prove Zen to be a very primitive religion, but to those who were real seekers, it proved on the contrary that every other religion may be primitive, at least Zen is not. In the first place, it is not a religion at all. It is not in competition with Christianity or Hinduism or Buddhism or Mohammedanism. It does not belong to that category at all. It has its own category, its own language, its own world, and there is no other competitor to it. Its uniqueness is absolute and categorical. But you will have to be very loving, very careful in understanding these strange dialogues, because the language seems to be the same as we use, but hidden between the words and between the lines, there is a different poetry, a different sound, which we are not accustomed to. But my people will understand it, because we are entering into the same space which Zen has been pointing. These dialogues can be understood only by meditators, otherwise they look stupid. The monk Kankei once visited the nun Masan Ryonin. He said to himself, if what she says hits the spot, I will remain there. If it does not, I will overturn the Zen seat. He was a seeker in search of a master, and when he came to see Masan Ryonin, a woman Zen master, he thought in his own mind, what she says, if it hits the spot, it is not a question of reasonability. Not that what she is saying is very wise, but if it hits the spot, my own being. If the arrow reaches to my being, what he says, I will stay. Otherwise, I will overturn the Zen seat. When a disciple comes, a seat is offered by the master for him to sit. And if the disciple rejects the master, he overturns the seat gracefully, saying that this is not my place, and leaves. That overturning of the Zen seat is symbolic that I don't accept you as a master, but I will not say it. Saying is so crude. I will just give you the hint that you could not hit this part of my being for which I am searching. I will have to go to another master. He entered the hall, and Masan sent a messenger to ask, "Have you come on a mountain viewing journey or for the sake of Buddhism?" In response, Kankei said, "For the sake of Buddhism." So Masan sat upon her seat and Kankei approached her. She said, "Where did you come from today, may I ask?" Kankei replied, "From Roko." Masan then said to Kankei, "Why don't you remove your bamboo hat?" Kankei had no reply and, making his bows, asked, "What is Masan?" The bamboo hat has to be removed in grace and gratitude when you encounter a master. The removing of the hat is simply signifying that I am available in humbleness, open. I am not covered or defensive. Even if you want to cut my head, I am ready. In the first court in America where I was presented after being illegally arrested, the woman magistrate was in a puzzle, because in America, in the court, you cannot have your hat. Wearing your hat in the court is insulting the court. Such are the different attitudes of East and West. I could see that she is a little bit puzzled what to do. She sent an attendant to ask me that perhaps you don't know that in the court you have to remove your head. To keep on your head is to insult the court. I said to him, go to the magistrate back and tell her that if she has courage, she should ask the question herself. Because according to me, to remove the hat is insulting. And I will not insult the court. The man thought for a moment, went back to the magistrate. The woman was even more puzzled. She simply thought it is better not to get into an argument. Because it is not written in the constitution. It is just a formal tradition. I am not legally bound to remove my hat. I will remove my hat only when I see a Buddha, not before a magistrate. Seeing the situation, the woman behaved sanely. She said to the attendant that there is no need. Just don't raise the question again. Different worlds, different symbols. When Masan asked, why don't you remove your bamboo hat? She was asking that if you have come for the sake of Buddhism, and that means for the search of the Buddha within you, then be graceful. Remove the head. Be humble and be receptive. Kankei had no reply. And making his bows, asked, what is Masan? Masan was the woman master's name. She answered, it does not so it speaks. The woman got the name Masan because of the mountain Masan where she had her monastery. But the peaks are so high that they are almost always covered with snow and clouds. They rarely sow. And that is exactly the situation of consciousness. It is so much covered with arts, the past, the conditioning, so much is smoke that it rarely shows. This is the beauty of Zen, that ordinary questions are suddenly turned into immense significance. He asked, who is Masan's husband? She answered, there is not real form of men and women. The difference and discrimination between men and women is only phenomenal. It is not authentic. It does not have a spirituality to it. That's why now we know science can convert men into women, women into men, and there are thousands of people around the world who has turned and changed their sex. Just bored. One gets bored. A woman every day, a woman again and again, a man in the morning, again you wake up a man. And one starts thinking, is there something to change? People change clothes, people change shoes, people change ties. Up to now it was not possible, but now it is possible. Many, many more people are going to change their sex. For the first time, a man will be standing behind a woman's body, or a woman may be standing behind a man's body, and then they will understand what mystics have always been saying, that the inside is the same, only the window and its frame is different. Your inner being is neither male nor female. Listening to this, he said, or rather shouted, the Zen shout quads and ask, why then don't you change and disappear? If men and women have no form, he is a disciple only, talking on a very lower level, not understanding the higher standpoint of Masan, she said, I am not a god, I am not a demon, what could I change? I have come to the point which never changes. That which changes I have left behind. Man changes, woman changes. Everything that changes I have left behind. At this, Kankei knelt down and became the gardener of Masan's temple for 3 years. At another time, Goi went to Sekito and said, "If you can say a word, I will remain here. Otherwise, I will go away." Sekito simply sat there, not saying a single word. Because silence is the only answer. It cannot be confined into a word. Sekito is answering, but the questioner is not able to understand. That silence can also be an answer. That there are things which cannot be brought to the lower level of language, of words. There are experiences for which you have to look in the eyes of the master. Perhaps you may see the moon reflected there. Perhaps in that silence, when you are looking into the eyes of your master, something may transpire. You may become aware of your own inner flame. Sekito simply sat there, and Goi went off. He did not understand the silent answer. From the back, Sekito called him, Where? Where are you going? Goi turned his head. Sekito said, "From birth to death, it is just like this, turning the head, turning the brain. How about it?" Goi was suddenly enlightened, so he broke his staff. He used to carry a staff and used to think that he has come to know, that he has become a master. The staff in Zen is carried only by the master. For the first time he looked into himself when Sekito asked him, "Where?" Because it is here. And where are you going? It is within. In a single moment of sudden awakening, he understood that up to now he unnecessarily carried the staff He was just a teacher, not a master. He broke his staff. These are all symbolic things in Zen. Breaking off the staff means now you are the master and I am the disciple. I will not say it in words because words are very polluted. I will make the symbol that I am no more a master. I was living in a false identity. I break that identity and throw it away. Now you are the master. And I will live in your presence, drinking as much as possible the waters of life. A poem of Chikusan reads, is part of all, yet all is transcended. Solely for convenience, he is known as Master. Who dares say he has found him? In this rackety town, I trained disciples. These last lines are particularly important. In this rackety town, I trained disciples. He must have been in Pune. You cannot find a more rackety town. But strangely, masters have chosen rickety towns in search of few intelligent people . The rickety town has a good quality. That in the beginning it becomes a little disturbed. Slowly, slowly it accepts that these people are a little different. It does not bother. Now we are here and in this rickety town people will not be aware at all that 5,000 people are in search of themselves. Sometimes they touch the very Buddhahood, the pinnacle of consciousness, but they will go on standing in queues before movie houses, shopping in the marketplaces, never being aware It is a strange unconsciousness that 5,000 people from all over the world are gathered here. They must be doing something, but they won't even look inside the gate. Such unconcern about the grandeur of man, such unconcern about the splendor of your innermost being, Chaucer wrote, "Everything, every place is real. Each particle makes up original man. Still, the absolutely real is voiceless. The true body is majestically out of sight. Neither you can say anything about the beauty, the majesty, nor you can see it with your ordinary eyes. When you turn inwards, these eyes are closed. They can't turn inwards. A third eye opens up. You have a new vision, a new clarity, which is not part of your two eyes. It is straightforward. It knows nothing as right or wrong. It simply knows what is. It is voiceless. It cannot say. It cannot call you that you are carrying a great kingdom of God within you and you are behaving like a beggar. What is small and petty things? Manisha has asked, "Recently I realized that expectations violate the freedom not of the one whom expectations are being projected, but on me, the one having the expectations. When I dropped my expectations, I felt a burden lifted, a sense of being freed." Manisha dropped that sense too. And then you will know pure freedom. Now you are ready to go inwards. Just a cup of tea.